The Big E Sports Show with host Elissa Walker-Campbell just got bigger as we bring you the 2009 NFL and college football season in style. We've got you covered with game insight, opinion, and football expertise. Featuring former defensive star and three-time national champion at Nebraska and NFL player Jason Peter.
There is no bigger honor than to go into the professional Hall of Fame or college Hall of Fame.
Each week, the Big E Sports Show will take you under the helmet to bring you the latest talk on the 2009 season of college and pro football.
Is there maximum effort out there? Because that's one thing you don't have to be talented at. You don't need talent to try hard. And that's the thing that I'm looking for out of them this year.
Under the Helmet with Jason Peter on the Big E Sports Show with host Elissa Walker-Campbell.
Elissa Walker-Campbell, we are back this weekend on the Big E Sports Show. And in our first segment, hey, we were talking Big 12 South, Texas A&M, of course, R.C. Slocum dropping by, the all-time winningest coach at Texas A&M. And now it is time to shift gears, shift our focus, and turn the page on the North. And we're going to chat about the latest up there. We're also going to take time to talk about one of our favorites, the lovely Lane Kiffin, recruiting 13-year-olds. Who knew? So it is time to go under the helmet and inside the huddle with our very own Jason Peter. How are you, Jason?
I'm great. How are you, Wilson?
Hey, well, it's warming up down here in Texas. We're like at the double nickel, 55 degrees.
That's not too bad, huh? You can actually play golf in that weather.
For me, it's a vicarious thrill. I just watch my husband and my son go out there and tee it up, and I just sit in the cart.
that's the best part.
Absolutely. That's true. Well, listen, before we talk about the Big 12 North, let's talk some Winter Olympics. Obviously, they're getting a very good ratings right now, a 19 share. And I know you've shared before on this program that you and your wife, you guys like to ski. So have you had an enjoyable time kind of taking in some of the Winter Olympics and all the festivities?
Yeah. You know, this is always a great time of the year, I think. And like you mentioned, we're skiers, and I grew up skiing up in Vermont. My folks would take us up there and get to hit the slopes every once in a while, and that's kind of, you know, the joke in our family, at least with my wife's family, is that I hadn't skied for 15 years since I was playing football, and I come back the first day and I'm just kind of flying down the course there, and they're all saying to me, "How? I thought you hadn't skied in 15 years." I said, "Well, when you learn to ski on ice on the East Coast up in Vermont, you can ski anywhere. When you get into powder in Colorado, it's like heaven." So that's kind of the little in the family type joke with my skiing. But as far as the Olympics, you know, America, United States has done a tremendous job watching the Vaughn girl win
Lindsey Vaughn
downhill, and Lindsey Vaughn, yeah, and Shaun White, you know, just remarkable. And I think it just goes to show that we're always kind of on the cutting edge, I think, in terms of pushing certain sports more forward, and you see certain countries that are committed to having success in athletics. You see the Germans all the time having success, and they spare no expense when it comes to those bobsleds. I think the luge, that's the sport I'm thinking of. I think I heard a story where they had, I think the rails made the rudders for those things by BMW, where they go up to the BMW plant and they spend all this time and money on all the aerodynamics. It's crazy. So certainly the Olympics started off on a sour note with the one luge man, the young man who his life was taken. But you know, since then, at least from the United States side of it, I think it's been a pretty successful Olympics.
Hey, we're talking to Jason Peter, a three-time national champion, of course, at the University of Nebraska. Who knew he was so versatile, and he would just be breaking it all down for us with the Winter Olympics. You know, you mentioned Lindsey Vaughn. I love her story, how she does capture gold, and also just a great testament on how she just was able to grit it out, gut it out. I mean, she had that terrible shin injury, that deep bruise.
Yeah, and it seems, I mean, with watching the coverage, you learn more and more about these athletes, and obviously women's skiing isn't most of the time front page material, so you don't know a lot about the history of these skiers. But Turns out she's been kind of an injury-prone type athlete, and the shin thing that she's overcoming this Olympics isn't the only obstacle that she's faced. I mean, there's been stuff in the past few years. I mean, you go back to the Olympics in Torino, and she had the accident on one of her first runs, and had, I guess, a lot of back pain and some issues there, and still was able to fight through it, and I think finish eighth. But it's a great story of redemption, and just kind of keeping the nose to the grindstone and working and fighting through all the other stuff, because the only thing that matters is your time out there on that athletic field, the slope, whatever it may be, and if you can just kind of block everything else out and just focus on that minute or 2 minutes or whatever sport you're playing, 45 minutes, 60 minutes, and just try to get the job done, great things happen. And for her, it's a dream come true. She talks about how she's been dreaming of this moment since the time she was 8 and 9 years old and the first time she met Peekaboo Street. So it's, great stories, and certainly because she skis for the red, white, and blue, it's a pleasure to watch.
Well, and she also talked about, Lindsey Vonn talked about the fact that she gave up everything for this particular moment. I think what's neat is you talked about really the mental fortitude and her being able to execute, because so much hype and anticipation with what she was going to be able to do. I guess she was in Sports Illustrated, and so many times that leading up to the games, you see these athletes getting so much attention, media attention, and then they just kind of fizzle out. And she was a gamer. She came through.
Yeah, and I gotta be honest, when I was sitting there with my wife and she said that, how she gave up everything, she said it almost like it was a drag. And certainly my wife and I have been trying to dissect what she said, and the best thing I can come up with is that there are times, I'm sure, when you're training and when you're 17, 18, 19 years old and your friends are going off and they're spending the day at the lake, or they're going out and doing this or going to the concert or doing something, and you got to make sacrifices. But that's all part of athletics. If you want to be the best, then those are some of the little things that you have to give up. But the truth is, I think when you get to a point in your life, whether it's 25, 30 years old, 50 years old, 60 years old, you look back at that stuff, and I think the people maybe that had an opportunity to make a run in athletics, and they were the ones that chose maybe to go to the lake that day or to go to the concert, I think when they get to an age where they're 50 and 60, they look back and say, gosh, going to the lake that day, not that big of a deal, not that important. Going to see that concert, not that big of a deal. But when you talk about somebody who's 50, 60 years old and looking back and has that gold medal, I think those little things that you have to give up, I think if you were able to do it all over again, you'd do it in a heartbeat and you'd give those things up. I mean, I know for myself, getting to to a point where you're a first-round draft pick and you're playing in the NFL, I mean, there are sacrifices. There are things that you have to give up. But when you get to a point and you got little kids running around, your son or your daughters, and you're able to show them kind of what you achieved and how far you got and what it took, I think that's the greatest thing in the world. And it's kind of an example for other people to say, this is the hard work. This is what you have to do in order to reach a certain success. And for her, I think if you asked her when she was 50, 60 years old, was it worth it? She'd say without a question.
Jason, you bring up a great topic because you're zeroing in on, living a disciplined life. Both of us, we were Division I athletes, and you just didn't wake up one day and, get a full ride scholarship. It really is, a daily commitment. I mean, I think back to my time in high school. I got up at 4 o'clock every morning. I was at the gym, leaving the house 4:30. It took me about a half an hour sliding on snow to get to the gym, but was there 2 hours before school every day working on my game, trying to take it to the next level. And so, yeah, certainly no regret on my part when I look back to those times, because I did miss out on some things, but I don't know. It's all about choices that you make.
Yeah, and I think that's, when some people, they talk about the amount of money that these athletes are being made, and, certainly has it gotten to a point where maybe it might be all getting a little bit out of control. Yeah, and I know with the NFL, they're redoing the collective bargaining agreement this year, so, I'm sure they'll get to a point where it starts to kind of settle down, but I know a lot of people, they have problems with the money that they're making for just playing a game, and they're not able to see kind of what else goes into it. The work, on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. I mean, there's the commitment that's being made. I mean, like you talked about, the sacrifices that are being made. Little ones, but still sacrifices, and the time spent in the weight room, and the mornings when you wake up, and for a second there, you forget about that you twisted your ankle, or you twisted your knee, but you're quickly reminded that first step that you get out of bed, and you can barely walk to the bathroom, or you can't get downstairs. I mean, there are a lot of things that go along, I think, with being an athlete, and a lot of hard work. I mean, there's a reason why people kind of tune in on every Saturday or Sunday to watch these athletes play. I mean, they're the best at what they do. And, I think financially they do deserve, to be rewarded. Is there a point, like I mentioned before, where maybe it's getting a little bit out of control? Yeah. But, it is a reflection almost of the amount of work that they do put in.
Well, a guy that's been putting in a lot of hard work, and it is paying off. He has his team at the top of the Big 12 North. That is Bo Pelini, and getting a big bump with a raise, $2 million a year. And obviously did a fantastic job getting his team to the Big 12 Conference Championship, almost knocking off Texas, and a win in the Holiday Bowl.
Yeah. I've been just with talking to people around town. Some people that are shop owners, kind of with the stores, the Nebraska stores, where you buy all the memorabilia, and they said for the first time in the last few years, business is almost picking back up. I mean, barring the economy and the situation that's in, people are excited about Nebraska football again, and you saw it a little bit last year. When Bo came in the first year they win 9 games, but I think people were still a little bit hesitant. They weren't quite sure whether or not they could kind of put all their chips in the center of the table, and now they are. People are confident in what Bo can do. They're confident in what the staff can do, and fortunately for Bo, he's been able to keep the same staff in place since he's got here. And that is something that you don't really see often in college football. To get back to the money, I mean, these coaches are being paid so much now. These head coaches getting $5 and $6 million a year, that if there's an offer on the table for some of these assistants, most 9 times out of 10, they're going to jump, because, they want the opportunity to be a head coach. They want the opportunity to make $4 or $5 million 1 year. And Bo has certainly had some coaches that have been offered opportunities, and fortunately for him and this Nebraska football team, they just haven't been the right, I guess, offers. And he's been able to keep that stability in the staff. But like you mentioned, he got the raise just a few days ago, and some of the guys on staff also got some raises. So I think it's well-deserved. I think he's floating around fifth, maybe, in terms of his salary compared to other Big 12 coaches, and I think that's about right. And Coach Osborne is a fair man. If Bo comes in next year and he ends up winning the Big 12 championship and playing for not a national championship, but maybe a national championship, or playing in a BCS game, I'm sure he'll sit down with Coach Osborne and they'll work a fair deal in terms of the production, in terms of what have you done on the field. And I think that's the way that a lot of things, I think, should probably play out, not just in sports, and in life. I mean, what kind of have you done for me lately? And, for Bo and his staff, they've done well, and they got rewarded for it.
Jason Peter is with us this weekend on the Big E Sports Show. We're going to bounce around the Big 12. Let's head over to Kansas. Obviously making some news already. Turner Gill, he has taken the names off the back of the jerseys. What's your thoughts on that, JP?
Yeah, I wish it was that easy just to take the names off. And I know what he's doing. He's trying to kind of build unity, and it's not about the individual. It's just about the name on the front of the jersey. So I do understand what he's saying. And, you know, you look at some other teams around the country that don't have the names on the back. You know, USC, for one, I mean, they're the prime example. They don't have the names on the back of their jerseys, I think, maybe on their road, or maybe both home and away. But I know one of their jerseys, they don't have the names on the back. You know, they don't win games because they don't have the names not on the back of the jerseys. They win games because they have some of the best football players in America, and they have guys that go out and execute. You know, this is something that right now it sounds good, but in reality it's kind of window dressing. It's saying, you know, look at this here, or this is what I'm trying to do. What it comes down to is the X's and O's, and guys going out and executing and doing their job. If taking the names off the back of the jerseys is something that gets those guys to go out and completely understand what you're asking of them, then so be it. Then, you know, take the numbers off the jerseys if that's what you have to do. You know, but in the end, you'll be judged by how many games you do win. And, you know, that comes down to getting your work done during the week and finding the right kids that can go out and execute your game plan.
Well, now, of course, you know Turner Gill. I've met him once. He spoke at our FCA luncheon, our business luncheon last May. Wonderful guy, wonderful role model for young men. But just talk about, you know, what do you think he'll be able to do in a short amount of time at the University of Kansas?
Yeah, it'll be interesting because, you know, I've mentioned this to other people. You don't want to follow the guy. I mean, best situation you never want to be in. And it's tough to do that. And for Kansas, you know, it's not like the guy in Mark Mangino was a guy who was winning national championships, but he did things with that Kansas football program that nobody else had been able to do. I mean, he had them where they're playing in BCS games and they're competing for conference championships. And I mean, every once in a while, maybe they make a run and they can go 12-1 or you know, maybe undefeated and attempt at a national championship. But my point being that in terms of Kansas football, Mark Mangino was the guy. And now you're coming in and everything you do will be compared to what he did and the results that he had. You know, just to kind of bring it back here to Nebraska, I mean, for Frank Solich, when he took over that program, he was following the guy. And that's a difficult thing to do. Now Tom Osborne, he also followed the guy in Bob Devaney, and it took him 25 years to finally win a national championship. And trust me, there were years where they wanted to run Coach Osborne out of Lincoln. And he talks about it all the time, where he almost packed his bags and went to Colorado because they were looking for a new head coach, and that's when they hired McCartney out there. But Coach Osborne was offered that job, and he thought about it. You know, he thought about it long and hard. You know, for USC and Lane Kiffin following Pete Carroll out there, you're following the guy, even though you were part of it. And what happens is, guys that come in and they follow the guy, they usually change just a little bit. A little bit of the structure, a little bit of the way things are done. And when you talk about championship football, when you talk about high-level football, when you tweak just a little bit, it's just enough to throw that engine off alignment. And it's just enough to kind of make things just not go as planned. And, you know, that's something that he's going to have to be careful and cautious of, is not changing too much of it. Sure, you want it to be your program and you want your kind of your footprint on it, but you got to be careful.
Only have time for one more question, Jason Peter. You mentioned the name that certainly creates a lot of buzz in college football, Lane Kiffin. Obviously, I don't know if you saw the interview that he sat down with ESPN's Shelley Smith. He talked about that Tennessee fans, pretty, you know, some harsh reaction there in terms of him getting up and leaving and heading to USC, death threats from some of the Tennessee fans. But what about his recruiting tactics? Is this true that he's already got a verbal commitment from a 13-year-old? I mean, what is he thinking?
The scary thing is, this isn't his first 13-year-old. He signed, or he had committed, Eric Berry, the outstanding safety that he had at Tennessee. His younger brother committed to the Tennessee program last year when Lane was the head coach there. So he goes as young young as they can come. And, you know, it's 13 this year. It'll be 12 next year. And sooner or later, he'll get to a point where he's signing 10-year-olds. And, you know, it's a little bit ridiculous. I mean, you talk about these kids and how they, you know, they change schools 3 and 4 different times the night before signing day. And you know, they give commitments out to everybody, and then they go back and they renege on those commitments, and they end up signing with other schools. I mean, now you're talking about a 13-year-old. Do you think if a 17-year-old doesn't know where he wants to go, do you think a 13-year-old does? I mean, please.
Absolutely. Certainly it is unprecedented. Jason Peter, thank you so much for stopping by. I wanted to get into a little bit about the Tiger tail, but we'll get a chance to kind of recap the press conference and get your strong opinions and thoughts on that as well. Best of the family. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, Alyssa.
You bet. We're going to step aside. Much more straight ahead this weekend on the Big E Sports Show, and join us online at eradiosports.com.